There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hello and welcome to Media Podcast live from LA. I'm Matt Deegan, and this week I'm at Podcast Movement Evolutions, the podcasting industry event here in Los Angeles, talking to the great and good of the podcast sector. Meanwhile, back in Europe, Paul Robinson speaks to Radio 1 controller Alex Hayden-Jones about the past year on the BBC's youth brand. That's all coming up in this special edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, the BBC's Director General Tim Davey outlined a more progressive licence fee and hit out over a decade in real term cuts. After his RTS lecture, he did the media rounds rejecting the idea of moving to a commercial model for funding in the UK. Try telling that to BBC Studios podcast team. Use of X, previously Twitter, in the US had dropped by 23%, according to data from Sensor Tower. Global use had dropped slightly less to 15%. And parents, get ready for more Cocomelon. The brand's owners are planning a European expansion, according to Deadline, and have launched their first channel for children, older children. You'll never escape. I'm here with Tom Webster from Sounds Profitable. We've just seen a session that your company was putting on, and it's a really interesting challenge, and it's not a new challenge. It's how do podcasts get on a plan? How do agencies decide to put some cash into podcasting? Because there's always, at an event, there's lots of positive noise. Oh, podcasting's going really great. Isn't it wonderful? But getting those guys to press some buttons to make sure some money flows, that's a challenge.
Yeah, and it's, you know, every media buyer has the same goal. Don't get fired. And you're unlikely to get fired if you do something similar to what you did last year, right? There's a tremendous amount of inertia with it. And unfortunately, I think for a lot of buyers, maybe they checked out podcasting 5 years ago, 8 years ago, and found it wanting, which it was, right? The tech was really not developed to do a lot of the things that it can do today with targeting and attribution. You know, it really needs to be reintroduced to a lot of buyers. And honestly, the focus of a lot of the research that we've been putting out at Sounds Profitable lately is showing just how podcasting is really one of the safest bets in advertising, because it actually delivers attention, which so many other media platforms really don't. And that's just an education message. So we're trying to spread that gospel.
Attention's interesting. So one of the things that came from that session was that a lot of audio is planned for streaming radio. There's a lot of streaming radio inventory out there. People understand radio maybe a bit better. Whereas with podcasts, it's not a background listen. You're more focused on it. Is that a big problem to communicate? Do we need to kind of pull ourselves away from radio?
A little bit. And, you know, honestly, podcasting is bigger than streaming radio is, right? It's far larger in terms of both share of ear and share, you know, as Edison reports it, and also just percentage reach. I mean, streaming AM/FM is a very small part of AM/FM content. So podcasting is significantly bigger than that, and podcasting is bigger than, you know, many social media platforms that brands are spending their money on. So it really just takes champions and evangelists and people willing to look at it with an open mind, because from a metric standpoint, it outperforms pretty much any other medium that I've researched. You know, unfortunately, I think it gets lumped in a little bit with streaming radio and streaming AM/FM, but it's a much more lean forward medium, and that's really where the attention that you're buying comes from.
So that's definitely true in the US. It's becoming more and more true in the UK. Do you think that's partly in America because radio hasn't delivered the breadth of content that maybe does in some European markets where there's a strong public broadcaster?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's an astute point, Matt, because you know we don't have a state broadcaster the way that so many other European countries do. And as you know, in many of those countries, that state broadcaster has a significant share, and they do a wonderful job, right? They're high budget, high production. You know, they're doing what their remit is, right? And we don't have that. And we also, it's been a while, I think, since we've had spoken word excellence, I think, right? I mean, we do have, you know, NPR affiliates and things like that, but so much of commercial radio in the States is either music, 80% of the stations are music, or if they are talk, it's syndicated and it's fairly narrow, right?
So pretty much sport or kind of right-wing news.
Right-wing news and finance are really the two things that continue to do well on American talk radio. And there's just so much, I think, muscle memory at the radio station level that they've lost by not having practice in putting out narrative spoken word audio. So, you know, we're catching up. I'm encouraged by the investment that I see in the space, but, you know, absolutely we need more investment in the space, and that really, I think, comes down to educating buyers about just how safe this medium really is.
So last thing, so in the UK, the BBC announced last week that they're going to put ads onto BBC shows delivered via RSS.
Yeah.
That's quite a big change. We don't have adverts on any other first-run content in the UK. Is it a good thing for the sector that BBC inventory is available? Because obviously some commercial broadcasters, podcasters, are a little bit nervous that Big Beast is joining the ads party.
Yeah, and well, look, that Big Beast slouches its way around the radio industry, as you know. Like, that's, you know, that's your biggest competitor always if you're a commercial broadcaster in the UK. I think it's a good thing. I think it's going to bring more attention to podcasts, and that's really where I'm going to focus. And I can see the wailing and gnashing of teeth about running adverts, but I think ultimately it's going to bring more attention to the space. It's going to legitimize the space a little bit more. And, you know, as you know, the BBC creates excellent content, so it's a good thing for the medium. And I've read some of the criticism of it. It's kind of a victimless crime, to be honest with you. But I think ultimately it's a good thing for the space.
Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt.
I'm here with Sangeeta Pillai. Hello.
Hello.
So you've made the trip from Blighty over to America for Podcast Movement.
From London town to LA.
Why have you come over?
So I was curious to see what the podcasting scene, I'm doing an inverted commas, which
yes,
people can't see because it's a podcast, to see what it was like, because my latest season of the podcast was a US-focused season. It was like 12 episodes featuring South Asian American women. And I'm trying to grow this as a market.
Mm.
So I thought it'd be quite interesting to come along and see who the players were, how it felt.
How was the success of your American season, and how has it made you think about what you do with the show back in the UK, or do you sort of double down on America?
So the American season was a test for me. Mm. I had an instinct that there's a whole South Asian American audience that I've not really reached. And I did the 12 episodes, and it was incredibly good. Like, the numbers are much higher than my UK numbers are. And this is what was fascinating. They're all listening on Chrome. Isn't
okay.
That fascinating.
Like listening through their desktop or
desktop
on the website.
Device. Yeah. And so the way they're consuming it is slightly different as well. So to me, it's telling me that there is a whole other audience here that I've not really tapped into. And for me, it's also a challenge because in the UK, I'm fairly well known in the South Asian community. Here, nobody knows who I am. So it's
does that give you some freedom to sort of restart or rethink who you are or what you're doing?
I like challenges, I think. And I seem to keep doing this in my life.
Mm.
And I think this is what I'm naturally excited by. And I think this new kind of American season version of Masala Podcast is exciting to me.
So your show, it's an independent show.
Yes,
You make it, you host it, it's all yours.
Yes.
You had sort of a Spotify exclusivity for quite a while. They've obviously changed how they do things, so you're with everybody now and back to everyone. What advice would you give other people that want to do what you've done?
I would say the first thing you do is spend a lot of time thinking about why you want to do this podcast. Why is it important? What is it about? It's not enough to say, I want to do a podcast because five other people are doing a podcast. Like, there are millions of podcasts. So what have you got to say that is a unique point of view? What is it that you've got to say that's this burning desire to say it? What is it that you will keep saying even if nobody ever paid you anything? Like, I hope people pay me, but even if they didn't, I will find a way to keep Masala Podcast going. It's that important to me, and it's that important to my community of South Asian women that I support. So what is it for you? Like, I really, really urge you to think about that. There's a lot of urgency in the world now where you're like, come on, get it out, do the thing, publish it. Like, don't hit publish.
Okay.
Like, do not hit publish unless you're, you know, like 100% sure this is the best you can make it. So these are the two bits of advice that I would give. And also, like, remember that what you have to say and your voice is a unique voice. Nobody else in the entire world has that perspective, has that voice, has that point of view, has those experiences. So that's the kind of, like, go out there and do it, but do it well, is what I would say.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Matt.
So from one continent to another, and last week we sent Paul Robinson out to Radio Days Europe to discuss some of the big challenges facing radio and podcasting companies there. Alex Hayden-Jones is the head of Radio 1, the BBC's youth radio station, and the best way for the BBC to maintain its relevancy to British audiences. Here's Alex.
It really matters because, as we tell everyone, radio is a habitual format. And once, for good and bad, once that habit's in, it's really hard to move them off. If we don't cater to the youngest audience, when they leave home and they're independently choosing their audio content and radio isn't in the mix, we will start seeing that drop off as they get older into their 20s, 30s, 40s, which is when the money will really bite for commercial stations, or the radio industry will start to have a problem.
You talked about reaching people who don't listen to Radio 1. You had all sorts of great ideas. Just share with us a couple of those.
I mean, there's loads. We try and do everything as best as possible, but the simplest, cheapest ways we find is to use fan bases. So whether that's artists that come in, and, you know, the good practice would be to have those artists on the radio, but the best practice would be to make a request some content that they could also share to their fan bases, so that whether that's a TV or a film star or an artist that's playing one of your performances, we drop the ball on it occasionally, but we try and keep reminding ourselves, no, what asset are they able to share? How do we make sure that asset is fun so that we are reaching their fan bases, not just the radio stations?
How do you measure the success of that activity?
I mean, that is the question.
I mean, do you know what works and what doesn't work?
Success of our own content on social.
Can you track whether people come across to Radio 1 having been maybe, for example, part of a fan base?
It will always be disappointing. Like the top, for example, the probably 1975, Paramore and Reading and Leeds festivals jump out to me as three of the best examples of us working with them about their talking to their fan base about the content they're creating for Radio 1. We have this thing called X-Ray, which is in the BBC, which shows live output. You see the bumps. The audio lifts as we get close to that thing happening. And it's because they've told their fan bases something connecting to the festival or to those artists will be on Radio 1. You see that. Whether those people stay with us afterwards, then that's a different metric.
Now, on stage, you told this fantastic story about how the most listened to moment on Radio 1 in 2023 is when you turn the radio station off.
Depressing.
Which sounds completely bonkers. So tell that story.
So it was the end of Giant DJ Hunt, and Greg was on air, had to stay on air until he found all 33 presenters from Radio 1. And we told him that he had to do that in 100 hours. And then we needed some Jeopardy because Greg would probably like to stay on even longer. He is so good at what he does. So we said, if you don't do it in 100 hours, we'll take the station off air. And when it got mentioned, it was like, oh, yeah, sure you are. You know, like, you know, thank you for the Jeopardy, guys. And then as it got closer to the finale, it started becoming a bigger, bigger narrative. And we got down to the last hour. Now, for it to be real, it had to be real. And we'd all made this deal within Radio 1. If he finds the last presenter, it doesn't happen. If he doesn't, we're doing this. This is not some radio magic here. We're doing this.
But he didn't believe you, I guess.
I don't think he believed us. So there was a bit of complacency there. And we captured the final few minutes when all of the presenters had been found. Matt and Katie were on in London. Charlie Hedges was using our mobile studio in Isle of Wight, which is where the finale ended up being. Greg had got through Molly King's social. She was the last presenter to be found. They'd cottoned on that she was on a boat. And so he had managed to blag his way to a boat and was driving out to this boat that he thought she was on. And the countdown was happening. It was the most adrenaline-fueled moment I've ever had listening to radio. Maybe because I run the station and I knew what was coming. But then they counted down 3, 2, 1. And if you see the video, you see the sheer terror on their eyes when they were like, I don't know what's going to happen now. And we didn't just close the mic. We spoke to the control room at the BBC. They took us off. It happened. We warned the transmitters around the UK ahead of this that we would be going off air, and we went off air. And I had the right. It was me that got to say to the control room, put us back on.
You must have been very nervous at that point.
I was shaking.
You must have been, yeah.
Also, we'd even spoken to Ofcom because we wanted to check our license covered the fact that we were not broadcasting. So all that was going through my head for a very geeky chat there.
Sure.
But all this was happening and the presenters were like, we've gone. But more importantly, the audience were like, they've only gone and done it. They're actually off air. And their DAB went quiet. They checked FM. They opened up sounds. Everything was quiet. And our X-ray, which we already mentioned, was climbing up. Each time it refreshed, it was like a sheer vertical line up. And I was like, I'm not bringing this station back on until that plateaus. I'm not losing this.
But a real sort of back of the neck, hair-raising moment. Proper. When do I put it back on again?
Yeah. And there was a discussion. Is it 20 seconds? Is it 40 seconds? If this happens, how long do we last? And we ended up waiting 5 minutes before.
Five minutes off air.
Yeah, wow. It was real.
Very brave, but fantastic. What a brilliant promotion.
It was fantastic. Yeah. And actually, the papers wrote it up as if we'd messed up. And that's brilliant because everyone was talking about Radio 1 the next day.
Makes it real, doesn't it? Yeah. You talked a bit about in-car. And I think one of your concerns is about in-car listening, particularly with your target audience.
It's slightly out of my remit as head of Radio 1 to be talking about in-car. This is more of an industry thing.
But I just
can't not use this platform to say, guys, as an industry, we need to be collective on this. In-car is holding up so many of our radio hours. It is important. We have the tech. You know, whether that ends up being a CarPlay or an Android that owns the dashboard, BBC Sounds for Radio 1, radio player across the industry. We have the tech there. We just need to be uniform on what those technologies look and sound like. Whether we're talking to the in-car dashboard about having a button, whether we need to elevate ourselves out of just being an app on the dashboard, whatever it is, we need to agree it collectively and do it as an industry. I've sat in on a few car presentations here, and every radio days for me, the session that gives me the most terror is the in-car one. Because, you know, we're all talking about, well, we should be in the centre of the dial. But we think that. We believe our audience think that. We need the car industries and the tech companies believing that.
You talked very passionately about the power of live. You know, so much radio now is recorded or it's remote VT. Being live, you really argued passionately for live engagement with the audience.
Because we are not versus podcasts. We are not versus on demand. Audio, the strength of audio hours growing is the strength for all of us. Our entire industry will be, you know, using the different formats. So we just need to know the strengths of each of those formats. I will listen to a podcast. I'm certainly not putting the, no offense to Alex Holcomb, my presenter, but I'm not putting the indie show on if I'm having a dinner party on a Sunday evening at, you know,
different
at
mood.
Flag. It's a different mood.
Yeah.
But I will put on one of our on-demand titles. So it's really important that we know the role of live and don't put on-demand programs on your daytime hours. Mm. If you are cutting costs and you're saying, let's pre-record everything, just be aware what you will lose out, that connection with the audience, the hearing themselves reflected. You have to work so much harder to achieve that. And that's rich coming from me when I have a license fee. I understand that. But there are even, you know, parts of the industry that will say, oh, we'll be a live radio station full of podcasts. You know, we just need to know there is a role for that. When we're talking about the new stations that are coming out from the BBC that are in pit now, a lot of that is going to be on demand because it's about showcasing on-demand music. But we just need to go a deliberate move. This will be an on-demand proposition of music for genre or for mood or for archive. And then you've got live. And these are the attributes that makes live the best. And we will do it better than anyone else in the industry around the world.
Alex Hayden-Jones, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He was on last week, and he's on this week as well. You were ages for James to come along.
Yes.
And then two come along at the same time.
It's like a London bus.
How many podcast movements have you done?
I've done every podcast movement that the Australian government would let me since 2018. So my first one was in Philadelphia, which was a lovely place to be.
So there's two a year, one that sort of travels around the country and one that's based here in Los Angeles. How do you find this event here in LA compared to all the other stuff you do as you jet around the world?
I think this event is really interesting. It's very much focused on the business of podcasting. There's lots of people here from the big advertising agencies, but also the big talent agencies as well. And it's a good place to be.
The word monetized definitely comes up a lot here.
Doesn't it just?
Podcast movement, which is good. This morning, though, you were doing a keynote. You were the warm-up act for Amy Poehler.
Yes.
And you were talking about a survey you've done with podcast makers about how they get on with all the podcast platforms, so things like Apple and Spotify. And people weren't afraid to give you some tough comments.
That's what happens when people can speak freely and anonymously.
Yes, don't want to annoy the big platforms that they rely on sometimes. What came out of that research? What do people think of the platforms and the job they do?
I mean, the platforms mainly are in good shape, sort of slightly lower scores this year than last year. And I think part of that is just there are a lot more new podcast apps out there, podcast apps doing interesting and different things. And I think people are seeing what's possible with those platforms. But yeah, I mean, everything was pretty good. A couple of niggles on Apple's side because Apple IDs are complicated and difficult. Getting, you know, more information out there about your podcast is difficult. So all of that stuff was hard. And people didn't really hold back when it came to talking about YouTube either.
Yeah, so if you don't know, YouTube have sort of got into the podcast world. They allow podcasters to put their shows. They've got a sort of semi-automated thing that sort of takes your feed and converts it into videos. They really just want you to upload YouTube videos, though. They're very focused on doing YouTube rather than adapting their way of working to podcasting.
Yes, and I think that's one of the reasons why it scored quite low in some of the results of the Podnews report card. It was, you know, really because, yeah, it's not really a podcast platform. Some people have described it as a bit of a leech of, you know, grabbing the audio files which are available in podcasting and sticking them on to the YouTube platform, where, of course, they can then put pre-rolls and post-rolls and all kinds of other things that they sell. So they earn handsomely out of all of that money, and that's fine, but actually podcast creators don't necessarily want that.
No, and also it's very limited. So if you're on Apple or Spotify, you sort of publish once with your own ads and up it appears. YouTube had extra rules around what you can and can't do. So if YouTube have an ad product, you can't replicate that with your own, basically.
Yeah, indeed. So you're allowed to do presenter read or host read ads, but you're not allowed to do what the Americans call announcer read ads, which completely confuses me, but those are essentially a 30-second radio ad in the middle of your show. You can't do that on YouTube. So that's against the rules, because obviously YouTube want to sell that 30-second spot for themselves.
Mm. And a lot of people, if you're a podcast, you make a show, your relationship with those apps is quite important, and quite a lot of them do editorial. So yeah, if you're an Apple or Spotify user, you will see promotions for podcasts. Those generally aren't paid. They're all editorially driven. The fact that podcasters have a connection with the human, that's something people from that survey seem to value.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, YouTube has a podcasting homepage. You can see it at youtube.com/podcasting. But when you have a look at that, or maybe youtube.com/podcast, it's been a long day, Matt. but when you have a look at that, then you see all manner of sort of weird stuff. I looked, and in the UK, there was one UK podcast. There wasn't PodSave the UK. There wasn't any of these other really big shows. There was Diary of a CEO, and that's it. And by the way, no Joe Rogan either. So it looks as if it's an algorithm that they haven't actually got to work yet. And unfortunately, that, certainly from the feedback that I got, seemed to be quite a lot of the problems that podcasting has. It doesn't seem ready yet, and they've been talking about it for the last two and a half years.
There's an interesting battle between sort of editorially driven things and algorithmic driven things. Spotify having a big push into algorithmic displaying of recommended shows alongside editorial. Even the BBC, I know, have talked about iPlayer and BBC Sounds being a kind of a combination of the two. For podcasters, learning to sort of support slash worship the algorithm becomes quite an important thing.
Yes, I think so. And there's a company called Osho, which is a podcast hosting company, but they've done a lot of work on decoding the algorithms that Apple Podcasts uses in search. They're doing a presentation at Podcast Movement Evolutions this year on how Spotify does some of it as well. And so they're rolling that information out. Apparently very, very different. And if you're on Spotify, for example, you will not appear in search if you haven't published something in 31 days, from what I understand.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, which is weird. So that means that Serial, one of the most popular podcasts in the world, that hasn't published for the last 4 years, but still people are searching for, won't appear in a Spotify search if that's correct. So there's lots of these sort of weird and wonderful changes, and it's just making sure, just like Google and other search engines, it's just making sure that your podcast is podcast search optimized. So if you are a show about media, for example, then call it something with the word media in the title.
Yes.
But don't, Matt, under any circumstances, use the word podcast.
No, it's terrible.
Because there are 710,000 podcasts out there with the word podcast in, and you're competing with all of them. So
can I just say, James, we are considering changing the name of the show.
Oh, are you?
Yes. We have some names that we think work.
Yes.
But listeners, if there's something you think would be a good evolution of the media podcast, all ears, send them through.
All ears, is that one of them?
No. Also, by me saying this, it means we're going to have to actually do it now. It's sort of been on our list of things to do.
And you'll need a new logo and everything. It's going to be a whole change.
Well, that kind of links to discovery, doesn't it? And trying to the idea for podcasters to find new listeners is such an important part of growing a successful show. Whereas historically, it wasn't really a focus. I kind of get the feeling that up to about 18 months ago, just there was growth for everybody. More new listeners, more time spent listening. So it was, you weren't competing with each other. Whereas now, it's very much dead man's boots to find a spot in someone's head, in their ears. You've got to like bump someone off.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, to a point, you have to bump somebody off. What I'm interested in, and what there isn't enough research in yet, is time spent listening to podcasts. We all see, and we'll see again at this very event, we'll see Edison Research's Infinite Dial, which tells us how many Americans are listening to podcasts every week and every month. But we don't get to see how long they're listening. And frankly, if we double the amount of time people spend listening to podcasts, that means that we double the amount of money that we can earn out of podcasts on a very basic level. So I'm much more interested in that than people. But I think, yes, you know, we have seen, you know, the growth of a number of podcast discovery companies, people helping you, if you're a podcast publisher, reach new audiences, and some are brilliant, Matt.
Yes.
I think we're seeing a ton of those, and that is, I think, shows the maturity of the medium that we're in.
James Fridland, editor of Pod News. You can subscribe to his free daily newsletter at podnews.net. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for joining us for this special edition of the Media Podcast from Podcast Movement in LA. We'll be back in London next Friday. If you're new to the show, why not hit follow on your podcast app of choice so you can get every episode. My name is Matt Deegan. The producer is Matt Hill. It was a Rethink Audio production. I'll see you next week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, on Monday, it's the anniversary of the table knife being invented.
On Tuesday, we explain how the tradition of the two-minute silence originated in Cape Town.
On Wednesday, we recall the day King George III proved he was assassin-proof.
On Thursday, let's all eat cake. It's Marie Antoinette's wedding.
And on Friday, we discover how Buffalo Bill helped invent the Wild West.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the Retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.